And we're holding in Gittin, page Zayin, Ois Yud Ches. We're in the middle of, we started on Thursday with the Agadta about the Churban, so now continuing on that. We learned about how Nirin Kesar was going to go. We talked about whether Nirin Kesar means the Emperor Nero himself or one of his generals, whatever the case. We said that he wasn't that he realized based on a pasuk that a child told him that that he is going to be successful, but then Hashem is going to just use him for this purpose to punish the Jewish people, and then he himself is going to be punished for it. Sorry, you want to show your father where it is? So he ran away and became a ger, and we said Reb Meir, and Reb Meir was his descendant. For some reason, in Ein Yaakov Gittin is after Sota, is before Sota. I don't know why. You'll find it. You have Nedarim, then Nozer, then Gittin, then Sota. I have no idea why he did it in that order, but that's where it is. It's page Zion in Gittin. Okay. Page Zion. Page Zion, Ois Yud Ches. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara continues. Shadre Ilavayu L'Aspasianus Kesar. So now the next general who was sent, now that Nero is out of the picture, then they sent Aspasianus Kesar. In English, he's called Vespasian. He wasn't the emperor yet, as we're going to have later on. Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai told him that he's going to become emperor, and that happened. But that's calling him Kesar because later on he became emperor. Anyway, also, Tzoralot, and he went and besieged Yerushalayim for 3 years. Havu Bahanu Tlosa Asiri. In Yerushalayim at that time, there were three rich people: Nakdimin ben Gurion, or ben Kalba Savua, or ben Tzitzis HaKeses. Now, why are they so called? Nakdimin ben Gurion is called that because the sun shone for him. You have the story in Masechta Tainis where one time he had gone to a rich Goyish landowner and borrowed from him 12 wells of water so there would be water for the Oilei Regel, and then at the end of there it hadn't rained all winter, and the guy's demanding his silver, and finally it rains, and then the guy says, yeah, but it's too late, it's already nightfall, and then Nachdimon Davin and the sun, and then the sun shone in the sky, the sun stopped for him, B'derech Nes, and therefore he was potter from paying the fellow. So afterwards they called him Nachdimon in token of that. Ben Kalba Savua is so called Shakal Nichnas the basic true roiv. Anybody who comes into Ben Kalba Savua's house when he's hungry, kekelev, like a dog, where the Gemara mentions elsewhere that a dog often has a hard time getting any food. Feral dogs that run around in the streets, nobody's interested in giving them food. Yotzik shu savea, such a person would go out and he would be satisfied. So therefore, he's called Ben Kalba Savor. Ben Tzitzis HaKeses is so called Shahoset Tzitzos Nigreras Agabek Soses, because his tzitzis would drag on pillows and cushions, meaning he would wear long tzitzis, and he would always only walk. Whenever he walked, it would always be on rugs or carpets or things like that. He'd never walk on the bare ground. The Ikad Amri, another version of why he's called Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, his chair, when he would go to talk with the government officials, his chair would be among the great people of Rome. They considered him very important when they went to greet the emperor. When they went to greet the emperor, then he would be there, and they would have a very important place for him to sit. It's Chelek Shlishi. If you have any other volume other than Gimel, then you have the wrong volume.
Okay, yeah, that's not okay.
Okay. Maharsha points out over here, first of all, Maharsha points out the Medrash in Eicha Rabba also has the story, but instead of three rich people, it has four, because it divides Nachdimon and Ben Gurion into two. It has Nachdimon and Ben Gurion as two separate rich people. Anyway, Maharsha points out that the point of this is the Gemara tells us in Yoma. Now, the first Beis HaMikdash, they were doing Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim, therefore it was destroyed. What about the second Beis HaMikdash? We know that they were Oisik B'Torah over mitzvahs. So, what went wrong? And the answer is Sinas Chinam, as we had before, the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa. So, now this is meant to illustrate that point, says Maharsha. We have these great Balei Maisim over here. We have Nachdimon Ben Gurion, whose tefillah was enough to make the sun stand still. We have Kalba Savua, was a tremendous Baal Tzedakah. We have Ben Tzitzis HaKeses, is extra careful with with the mitzvah of tzitzis, or that his kistay motelos being derli roimi, meaning that he has pull with the government, and he should be able to, he would be in a position to be able to talk to the government and get them to treat the Jewish people decently. And nevertheless, it didn't help, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. The Maharal also has a lot of discussion about it in his Sefer Netzach Yisrael. He has a long discussion of this whole sugya, and also in Chedushei Agadis on the Gemara over here. He mentions a number of things that the three rich people over here represent. Among other things, they represent Chesed, Gvura, and Tiferes, Chesed, Din, and Rachmim, as he calls them respectively, or they represent three different reasons for which a person might, for which the Eibishter would give a person Ashirus, because of his Maisim Tovim, and because of his importance and so forth, and each one of them represents a different kind of thing. So the Gemara continues. Chad Omalahu, one says to the people of Yerushalayim, Ano Zainalahu Bechiti Vesairi, I will support the people during the siege with wheat and barley. Now, the plan was like this. In other words, before, as we're going to talk about soon, you had the Biryonim, but the idea was like this. As we talked about on Thursday, the whole thing, I mean, obviously they hadn't rebelled against the Romans in reality. It was only, it was Ben Kamtsa who was slandering them that they were. Nevertheless, the Romans are bringing their army and besieging. But also, like we talked about on Thursday, Josephus, the historian who lived at that time, describes in some detail how there was a whole thing going on. There had been a corrupt and anti-Semitic Roman governor who they finally managed to throw out of Yerushalayim together with all of his Tzduki supporters and all. So they're also going and claiming that the Jews are actually rebelling against Rome. So now the idea was, there's going to be a long siege, but during that time, if it lasts long enough, they'll have a chance to convince the Romans that, no, we have nothing against you ruling over Eretz Yisrael. Gesunte heit, you want to rule over us, you want us to pay you taxes, and you'll appoint governors over us, v'chol v'chol, go ahead. But at least those governors have to be decent people, menschliche people, and not like this anti-Semite that you had, not like these last couple of anti-Semites that you had over us. So that was the idea. In other words, there should be a long enough siege that eventually the Romans are ready to, you know, look, we're not going to conquer the city so soon anyway, therefore we're more willing to talk terms. So that was the idea behind it. The second one said, V'chad omelahu b'dechamra u'milcha u'mishcha. The second one said, I'll provide wine, salt, and oil. V'chad omelahu b'ditzivi. And the third one says, I'll supply wood. V'shabchu rabbonu l'ditzivi. The Chachamim praised most of all the one who was going to supply the wood. If you want to bake one achlva, one oitzer, one storehouse full of wheat, you need 60 storehouses of wheat for the fuel to be able to fuel the oven. So in other words, therefore, the one who's offering the wood is offering something that's a lot more expensive and a lot more precious than any of the other things. And in fact, I skipped a line over here. Did Rav Chista kol aklidi have a muscle of shame by benitzivi? Rav Chista, we find he would give over all of his keys to his mishores by benitzivi, with the exception of the storehouse of wood. And why was that? Because the wood is so important. You need 60 times as much wood in order to bake one, in order to bake and cook one storehouse full of wheat. Now, why do we need both points? Yad Yosef brings a point over here from Seder Adertis. We find in a Gemara in Yuma that it says Rav Chista used to find slav birds in his storehouse of wood. The Eibishter provided him, especially that the slav, those fatty birds that the Jewish people had in the Midbar, Hashem would provide them to him, that he'd find them among his storehouse of wood. So therefore, if you only had the first statement that he gave his keys, all his keys except the storehouse of wood, to his Mesharis, you wouldn't realize that's because of the importance of the wood. You'd say it's because he wanted the Mesharis to take the slav for himself. But now you have the second point that Rav Chista says, then you realize why it's the wood itself, the wood in and of itself is important. Anyway, Havalahu Lemezan Estrin V'chad Shata, they had enough supplies over there that they could have lasted through a 21-year siege. The Maharal, again, in both of these places, has a long explanation of the symbolism behind it. He says there's a number of things. First of all, again, we're saying there were three rich people representing that the idea. He says everything a lot of things in Yiddish type come in threes. We Jewish people have a three-part people, Kohenim, Levim, Yisraelim. The Torah has three parts, etc., etc. There's a whole bunch of threes when it comes to the Jewish people. Second of all, he says, when it comes, we find sometimes a famine, the longest we ever hear of a famine lasting is 7 years, like in Mitzrayim, like in the times of Elisha. So like seven is the ultimate length of a famine. So if we're saying that the three of them had enough to support the city for 21 years, each with their own thing, in other words, you can look look at it differently. Each one would have 70 years worth of supplies. So therefore, so symbolizing, in other words, each one has in by themselves enough to supply throughout what would be considered the maximum length of a famine, therefore 21. And he also talks about the idea that 21, we find we have the 21 days of the 3 weeks. So the idea that 21 is like the maximum amount, the maximum window of time during which the Goyim have the opportunity to dominate over us Jewish people. So had they withstood the 21-year siege, in other words, and the point is, at that point, the Romans would have lost their ability to conquer us b'chlal. But what happened was, havabuhanu biryoni. In Yerushalayim, there were biryoni, which means that Rashi translates, anoshim reikim upoichzim l'mochama, empty people who are hasty and they want to go to war. Josephus talks about it at some length in his histories. He calls them zealots or kanoim in Hebrew. These are basically various groups. He describes there were several subgroups among them, but all of them had this in common. They want to be free of the Romans' rule b'chlal. The Chachamim were saying over here, as we just said, didn't mind, let the Romans rule us, gesundheit. They understood this is the time the Ebeshter has chosen, that they're going to be ruling over us, but as long as they treat us decently. These biryonim are... They're more in it for the politics. They want that we should have a free and independent Eretz Yisrael. So they want to fight. Reb Levick, by the way, that Rebbe's father points out something in this that the word biryoni, you can rearrange it to bnei resh yudvav. Resh yudvav 216 is gematria gvura, representing that these are people who have an extreme form of gvura and they're spoiling for a fight. And he goes on to explain a few other symbolisms in their name as well. Anyway, Amrul Hu Rabbanan Nepuk V'Navid Shlomo Ba'Adayu. So the Chachamim in Yerushalayim are saying, let's go out and make peace with the Romans. Again, we never rebelled against them in the first place. We just want that they should get rid of these corrupt governors and their tzduki hangers-on and whatever. So let's go make peace with them. Lo Shavkinu, but the Biryonim wouldn't let them. They were guarding the gates of Yerushalayim and they wouldn't let anybody out. Amri Lahu, instead the Biryonim said, Nepuk v'navid krova ba'adayu, let's go out and fight against the Romans. Amri Lahu Rabbanan lo nistaya milsa, the Chacham said, it's not going to be successful. At this point in history, the Ebeshter has decided that we have to be ruled over by the Romans. Yavon Adoni lifnei avdo, it's already the time when Yaakov has to be subjugated to Esav, and therefore, so it's not going to help, we're not going to be successful in being able to fight against them. Ben Yehoyada points out, in fact, they the Biryonim were not, now Rashi says they were Anoshim Reikim, but I guess we have to understand that they're relative to the Chachamim, they're Reikim. I mean, probably if we met any of them, we would think that they were outstanding tzaddikim and people who care for Yiddishkeit. But anyway, so Ben Yehoyada says they were arguing, listen, Akol Kol Yaakov, we're learning Torah, shouldn't that be enough to defeat the Romans? And the Chachamim explained to them, right now, Lo Mistaya Milsa, it's not enough. Right now, we need more than Akol Kol Yaakov, and right now, we don't have enough Sosim for it. Komu kalanu lahanu amri dechiti v'sairi. So the Biryonim went and burnt all those storehouses of wheat and barley and of everything else. It actually also adds the storehouses of wood, so that this way they figured everybody's going to have to be forced to fight. V'hava kafna, and the result was there was a famine in Yerushalayim. The Medrash in Eicha Rabba tells this, first of all, in Ovestir Abnosin, it tells how Kalba Savor himself goes and pleads with the Biryonim not to set these storehouses on fire, and they ignored him. But also the Medrash, now here we're going to have soon in the Gemara, we're going to mention about Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai's nephew, Abba Sikra. So the Medrash tells over there that when Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai saw what happened, how all these storehouses had been burnt, he's saying woe about it. And he almost got in trouble for it. He has to pretend to this very same Abba Sikra, his nephew, that he really said, va, it's a good thing. Like the Medrash has the expression, between vai and va, Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai's life was saved. Like, in other words, he had to pretend as though he approves of it, because he says, you know, I realize what you're trying to do. You're trying to force that this way the people will have no choice but to fight. But in reality, Rabbi Yechon Ben Zakkai and all the other Chachamim realize that this is a disaster, and this is, So the Gemara tells what happened at one point during the famine. Marta bas Baitus asirta de Yerushalayim havia. Marta bas Baitus, that was her name, she was a rich woman in Yerushalayim. Now, it's interesting that Marsha points out over here, there's a Marta bas Baitus mentioned in other places in Shas, that it mentions in Yevamos, that she paid a lot of money for her husband, Yeshua ben Gamla, to become the Kohen Gadol. Now, in turn, Yehoshua ben Gamla, it says about him, on the one hand, he was appointed Kohen Gadol because of a bribe, which is not a good thing. On the other hand, it's brought that he, in Bava Basra, that he's the one who established the concept of chadorim for children, where until then, the original thing was that a father would teach a son Torah, and if a son doesn't have a father, then he ends up on Am Haaretz. Then later on, they had melamdim only for older children, and finally, Yehoshua ben Gamla made a takana that they should have, schools even for young children, 6, 7 years old, as we have Ada Yemazan. The Gemara credits him that if not for him, the Torah would have been forgotten from the Jewish people. Now, the Gemara mentions, when it mentions about Marta Bas Baisus buying her husband's way into the Kohen Gadol, it says that she paid money to Yanai HaMelech. So Marsha points out, in that case, it's hard to say that it's the same Marta Bas Baisus over here, because Yanai lived well over 100 years before the Churban. So it sounds like it must have been a different one. On the other hand, Marsha goes on to say later on, it may have been the same one, because as the Gemara is going to point out, what happened in the end to her wealth, it may have been Mida Kenegan Mida for the fact that she used her wealth improperly like that. There was quite a bit of discussion about it among later historians as well about all of this. Now, we do find Josephus, when he mentions the Kohanim Gedolim of his times, he mentions one named Yehoshua ben Gamla a few years before the Churban. Some historians think maybe that's the same one. In that case, it would fit that this Marta Bas Baisus was his wife. The problem with that is that he also describes that one was a tzeduki, and he mistreated the people very badly. He's not going to be the kind of which the Chacham are going to say in him Zocher Latov. And it's also, practically speaking, a few years before the Churban is not a time you're going to be able to set up Chadorim, and such a takana is going to stick. So therefore, So the possibilities are maybe indeed it was two different Yehoshua ben Gamlas and two different Marta Bas Baisuses. In fact, the Medrash, when it tells the story, names her Miriam Bas Baisus rather than Marta Bas Baisus. In that case, it may be a completely different woman. But aside from that, also the other possibility is maybe Taka, he was appointed by money, by a bribe, but nevertheless he wasn't such a bad guy, and he did make the takana of Chadorim. But the other possibility is maybe that the one who was appointed because of the bribe is Taka the one who was a tzeduki a few years before the Churban, and then the one who made the Chadorim was 150 years earlier. Be that as it may, the Gemara says, Shadauta l'shlucha. One day she sends her messenger to the market. Omrele, she tells him, Zil isili smida. Go bring me fine flour. Ad ozel, by the time he got to the market, is daban all the fine flour had sold out. Osava omala, he tells her, Also, Omalach smida leka. There's no fine flour. Chivar to ikka. There's still plain white flour. Omrelei. So she tells him, fine. Zil isili. Go get me the plain white flour. Ad ozel. By the time he went to the market, is daban. That had sold out. Also, Omalach. He tells her chivar to leka. There's no white flour. Gushkura ikka. There's pumpernickel flour. Omrelei. Zil isili. She tells him, go bring it to me. Ad ozel is daban. By the time he went, that was also sold out. Also, Omalach gushkura leka. He tells her there's no pumpernickel even. Kimcha desairi ikka. All there is barley flour. Omrele, she tells him, Zil Isili, go bring it to me. Ad Ozel is Daban, and by the time he went, that was sold out also. You have to wonder, I mean, are they stupid over here? Does she not realize, just get me whatever there is? And does he not realize, just get me whatever there is? One point is, you know, we had at the beginning of the Sugya, the Gemara had introduced the Sugya with a pasuk from Mishlei, Asher Adam Afached Tamid, happy, fortunate, as a person who's always concerned about the consequences of his actions, or Maksha Libo, but a person who's stubborn, Yipo Bara, ends up falling into evil. So that may describe over here, she is so set in her ways, and so is her shliach, that neither of them, it doesn't even occur to either of them, you know what, let's just make do with whatever it is, each one know, you know, it's got to be what it's got to be, and there's no compromising or anything, so yeah. I mean, you can imagine also with the shliach, for all we know, you know, every other time that he made one tiny mistake, and his Marta Bas Baisus may have given it to him over the head, so now, like, he's too afraid to show any independent spirit. Anyway. Have a shlifa masana. At that point, she was barefoot. She didn't have her shoes on because she was at home and the pastor's her house was carpeted or whatever. Omra, she says to herself, Marsha points out over here, by the way, that in the times of the Beis Mikdash, they had four kinds. When you bring the korban Torah, you have four kinds of bread in it. Corresponding to that is where they went through four kinds. Now that there's no korban Torah anymore, then four kinds of bread disappeared from Yerushalayim, which are the four in this story. Anyway, so Omra, she says to herself, Epuk ve'echzi imashkachna midi l'meichal. Let me go out myself and see if I can find anything to eat. Oisiv la'parta bakara, while she was walking in the street, a piece of dung from an animal, or from a person for that matter, whatever, Rashi says it was an animal, perash shogel le'behema, a piece of animal dung stuck to her foot, umesa, and she was so nauseated that she died from it. Kori Allah, Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai applied to her the pasuk in the Teichacha, Haraka b'chava ha'anuga v'gomer, the most delicate and pampered woman among you, whereas the pasuk continues, Asher l'nissa chaf ragla hatzeg ala aretz. She would never even put her feet on the bare ground, and now she's going to suffer terribly from the siege and from the famine. So that exactly describes her. Marsha points out, the pasuk already describes before that what's going to happen to the men during the siege. Then the pasuk goes on to say, Haraka b'chava ha'anuga, so therefore it's talking specifically about a story like this. Why did she deserve such a thing? Ion Yaakov points out one thing. You know, we said she was a rich woman. Here we had before the three rich people of the three rich men of Yerushalayim who offered their wealth to sustain the city during a long siege. Well, she's not among them, meaning that she was not a Balas Tzaka. So therefore, Ikadamri, another version of how she died, she ate one of the figs that Reb Tzadik had sucked out, as the Gemara is going to explain in a second, and she was so nauseated by that she died. The Maharal points out the symbolism of it. One way of looking at it is basically the dung, the animal waste, represents the chumrius of the body. The figs that she smelled, the smell of Reb Tzadik's many years of fasting on it, represents the sense of smell, which is the most refined of a person's senses, so which is more related to the neshama than any other sense. So the question basically is, what was more the cause of her, when a person dies, and particularly when she died, was it first from the mitzad the guf or mitzad the neshama? Therefore, the two different versions. What's going on with Reb Tzadik? The Reb Tzadik Yosef Aboin Shnin B'Tanisa Doi Lecher V'Yerushalayim. Reb Tzadik had been fasting for 40 years that Yerushalayim should not be destroyed. Every fast by day and eat by night. He'd fast Mondays and Thursdays, whatever it is. The point is he'd be fasting during those 40 years. During the 40 years, we find that we find in Yuma and in other places that during the last 40 years before the Churban, they started seeing signs that the Churban is coming close. It mentions over there the red string stopped turning white on Yom Kippur, the Ner Ma'arovi never lasted, the doors of the Heichal would open on their own, etc. So there were signs already that the Churban is impending. So at that point, Reb Tzadik started fasting to avert the Churban. So now, eventually, over the years, he became so weak from his fasting, when he would eat something, you could see it on the outside, you could see it going down, that's how skinny he was. So now when he's finished with a round of fasts and he wants to improve his strength, so he couldn't actually eat food anymore. They would bring him figs, dried figs. He would suck out the juice from them, v'shodi lahu, and then throw them away. And it was all he could have was the juice from them. So now, according to the second version, Marta Bas Baisus found one of these figs that he had sucked out, and that disgusted her so much that she died from that. The Gemara continues, as she was about to die, she took all her gold and silver, and she threw it out into the street. Omra, she says, "Hi, the Miami Boily. What do I need all this gold and silver for? It didn't do any good to help me, even to get the most basic food." Thus, the pasuk says in Yechezkel, "Kaspa machutzis yashlichu." They'll throw out their silver into the streets, and the pasuk continues, "Zahavam l'nidati," and that their gold will become the nidah will become a disgusting thing, something that you stay away from. Marsha points out the end of that pasuk in the continuation of that pasuk in Yechezkel continues, "Kaspa mazahavam lo yuchalat silam b'yam eres Hashem." Their silver and gold won't be able to save them on the day of Hashem's anger. "Nafsham lo yisabeu," their souls they will not be able to fill up and be satisfied. So that exactly describes what happened with Marta Bas Baisus. With all her gold and silver, she can't find the most basic food to satisfy her hunger. He also Marsha adds again, if we say that this is the same Marta Bas Baisus from the story where she gave money for her husband to be appointed as Kohen Gadol, then that explains why Mida Kenegan Mida. She used her gold improperly for that, and therefore her gold couldn't save her when bad times came. The Medrash, by the way, the Medrash in Eicher Rabbah also tells something, although there it names her Miriam Bas Baisus, and tells the story considerably differently. It does identify her over there as the wife of Yeshua ben Gamla, and it mentions over there how she would always walk on carpets, and how one time her husband is serving as Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, and they have to spread out carpets for her to walk the whole way, because she won't walk on the bare ground. And then the Gemara says over there that Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, who lived at that time, saw that eventually the Romans captured her and dragged dragged her around by the hair. They tied her hair to the tail of a horse and dragged her around the streets. The Gemara continues. Abba Sikra, Resh Biryona de Yerushalayim. Abba Sikra was the head of was the chief of the Biryonim of Yerushalayim. Bar Achse de Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai Hava. He was the nephew of Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai. Again, there's a lot of symbolism going on over here. First of all, Abba Sikra, Rashi just says Kach Shmoi. The Medrash actually calls him by a different name, calls him Ben Batiach. And we find, by the way, in a Mishnah in Kalim that mentions the fist of Ben Batiach, which it says Yeshne Kirush Kol Adam. His fist was the size of the average person's head. So he was a really giant of a man, which explains why he was the head of the Biryonim. The Maratz Chayus, I think it is, explains that Abba Sikra may not have been his real name. We find for the we find we Rashi actually mentions on the Mishnah when we talked about Sikrikun that a Sikrikun is a goyish bandit who's threatening to kill a Yid unless he gives him his land. And we find in Josephus's history, we find there were people who were going around hired assassins who were called Sikarii because a Sikar is like a type of small dagger. So Abba Sikra may have been his title. Like the head of the Sikari, and then his real name is Ben Batiach. The Reb Levick points out also Sikra also means red, which fits perfectly with fact. Red is the color of Gvura. We said before the Biryonim were people of great Gvura. Therefore, their head, therefore their chief has the name Abba Sikra, the head of redness. Anyway, he was the nephew of Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai. He explains also the symbolism. Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai represents Chesed. He's like Moshe Rabbeinu. He lived, among other things, the Medrash says he lived to be 120, just like Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, so now his nephew, just like you have with Moshe, you have Chur, his nephew, who helped hold up his hand together with Aaron. And Chur represents Gvura, the same way over here, Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai's nephew represents Gvura. Anyway, Bar Achse did Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai have? He was Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai's nephew. Sholachle, so Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai sends him a message. Come to see me in secret. Also, so Abba Sikra comes. Omalei, Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai tells him, Emas Avditu Hochi, how long are you going to be doing this? You and your Biryonim, you're guarding the gates, you're not letting anybody go out and surrender, you already burnt the storehouses, you're killing everybody with famine. Omalei, so Abba Sikra says, my Evid, what can I do? At this point, if I tell them anything, they're going to kill me. At this point, things have gone so far that even he doesn't fully have control over the Biryonim himself. Again, you look in Josephus's history, actually, you can find at that time, there were several different factions of Biryonim in the city. So Abba Sikra was the head of one of them, but he's still, even his own faction, he doesn't completely have control over, let alone the other ones. So Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai tells him, Chozili takanta ledidi, in that case, find some kind of takana for me personally, de epok, that I should be able to leave the city. Efshar dehavi atzola purta, maybe we'll at least be able to save something. Omalei, so Abba Sikra tells him, here's the idea. Nikit nafshach b'ktziri, pretend like you're sick, put out a rumor that you're sick. So everybody will be coming and asking about you, pretend like you're already a goisis, like you're already on the verge of death. But I see midi sari of agni gabach, bring something smelly, for example, the nevela, Rashi says, and have it next to you, so that people will think your taka have passed away and your body is starting to decay. So then people will say that you have in fact passed away. So you'll be put in an oren to be carried outside the city. Now we find that the halacha is you're not allowed to bury bodies inside Yerushalayim. So therefore, even during the sieges of Yerushalayim, they would allow, even the one thing the Biryonim would allow was that people should be taken out for burial. Rashi even mentions in the Teuchacha that v'nitatim biad oyev, Rashi says that what's going to happen is you're going to have, people are going to die in the city, you're going to take them out for burial, and then you're going to end up being captured by the enemies. So we see that even in times of sieges, they would do that. They had Derech Agav, for example, you have the one time I know they weren't able to do that was during the siege on the old city during the Israeli War of Independence. There was a period over there when the siege was so tight, they weren't able, the Jordanians, whatever, weren't allowing them out. They had no choice but to bury them in the city as a Hadash Shah. And then later on, after they surrendered, they were able to take them and bury them on Haram Menuchos or whatever. But anyway, here during the siege of Yerushalayim before the Churban, they were able to do that. So therefore, so now, so you'll be carried out. The ones who should carry you specifically should be your Talmidim. Nobody else should carry you. Because if anybody else carries you, they might realize that you're lighter than they expected. De inu yadi, people know that a live person is lighter than a dead one because a live person distributes his weight to make it more comfortable to carry him. In halacha, you have, for example, you carry out a living person on Shabbos, it's not an isur d'oraisa because chai nosa etzatzmei, a living person helps carry himself, he helps distribute his weight. But like this, when your Talmidim are carrying you, then they're in on the secret. They know you're not actually dead, so therefore they're not going to be surprised by it. Marsha points out that the Biryonim are not going to wonder why that, because we know Tzaddikim often do that. Tzaddikim often give instructions who should be the one to carry their mitzvah. We find Yaakov Avinu did, for example, so it won't seem strange that you're giving specific instructions that your Talmidim should do that. So Ovid Hochi says, sure enough, Rabbi Yechim and Zakeh does that. Nichnas by Rabbi Yezer mitzad echad, Rabbi Yeshua mitzad echad. Rabbi Yezer carried one end of the mitzvah, and Rabbi Yeshua carried the other. Ki motel apischa, when they came to the entrance of Yerushalayim, bo'ol midkirei, the Biryonim who are guarding the gate over there didn't believe that he's truly dead. They thought he's playing a trick or something. So they wanted to stab him. Omelahu, but Abba Sikra says to them, he showed up on the scene, and he tells them, Yomru, people are going to say, Rabban Dokru, they stabbed their own Rebbe. Who is it that's going to say? Rashi says the Romans are going to say about you. Look what lowlifes these guys are, that they stabbed even their Rebbe. Other Mephoshim understand that it means that actually it might mean that the other Biryonim are going to say that, as much as the Biryonim are opposed to the Chachamim politically, but they had a certain derech eretz for the Chachamim, at least not to the point where they're not going to tolerate that the other Biryonim, other factions of Biryonim are not going to tolerate that they're going to go and stab Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. So they thought at least to push him, to shove him, and maybe that way he'll be startled and he'll call out, he'll scream out. Again, Abba Sikra tells them, Yomru Rabban Dochfu, people, whether it's the Romans or the other Biryonim, are going to say, you shoved your Rebbe, it's not respectful. So, Poschulei Baba, they opened up the gate, Nafak, and he was able to go out. The Medrash adds the detail that Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua put him down in a Beis HaKvaris, and then they returned to Yerushalayim. Kim Motalahosam, when Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai reaches the Roman camp, Omar, and then they bring him to Aspasianus, Omar, he says, Shlomo Alecha Malka, Shlomo Alecha Malka, peace to you, king, or emperor, peace to you, emperor. Twice, Marsha points out, at the end of the Perek, the Gemara points out that when you're speaking to a king or a Talmid Chacham, you're supposed to give a double shalom. So here he did that. So Aspasianus says to him, Michaibas Trek Tola, you deserve twice over to be put to death. Number one, I'm not the emperor, and you're calling me the emperor, so therefore, like, you're joking, you're making a joke of me. The Medrash says it a little differently. Marsha explains that because after all, there is an emperor right now, and you're putting him down by calling me emperor. And the Medrash also says that Aspasianus is afraid he's going to get in trouble if word gets out that he's been saluted as emperor when there is an actual emperor still there in Rome. He could lose his head. So that's one. The two, imalkana, number two, if I am the emperor, adha idna maila osis lagaboy, why haven't you come to me until now? We have the famous thing in the Machzor before Hamelech, where Rabbi Aaron Kaliner is davening by the Omud, and then he breaks down before Hamelech, he faints, and when they revive him, he says, I was thinking of this Gemara over here, you didn't come to me until now. We're saying Hamelech in front of the Edishter, we should think the same way. In fact, there's an explanation related to that also, that this is why, you know, you have, but in Brochus, it says before Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai passed away, he's crying, and he says, Eini yodeh be'ezer derech melichinosi. One point of it is that he was thinking back to this story over here. What a pachad that I had when I'm standing in front of Aspasianus, and why have I always had that pachad when I'm standing in front of the Eibishter? So Rabbi Yechanan answers him, you're saying that you're not the emperor? No. Ivra, as a matter of fact, Malkaat, you must be the king, you must be the emperor. Do you love Malkaat? If you were not the emperor, Lemimsira Yerushalayim biyodach, Yerushalayim would not be given over to you. Now, he hasn't actually conquered Yerushalayim yet, but Tosfos points out, I mean, at this point, with the famine raging in there, it's been 3 years already, and he's pretty much on the verge of conquering it. So therefore, it's already pretty much a done deal. So it wouldn't happen unless you were a king. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, "Va'alavonin ba'adir yipo," the Levonin will fall with an adir. So what does that mean? Ve'in adir el melech. The word adir refers to a king. Dichtiv v'hoya adirei mimenu v'goymer. As the pasuk says, the king will be from among themselves. Meaning it's talking about Mashiach's times, that the king over the Jewish people will be exclusively Melech Mashiach. We won't be subjugated to the goyim anymore. And therefore, so we see that the word adir means king. Ve'in levonin el beis hamikdash. And the word levonin refers specifically to the beis hamikdash. Shenemer ha'hora toy v'hazer v'hazer v'halevonin. Moshe asks to see this good mountain and the levonin, referring to he wants to see the site of the Beis Hamikdash. It's called Levonin Shemal Ben Avnei Sein Shal Yisrael. It whitens and cleans up the Averis of the Jewish people. In context, Marashah points out that Pasuk V'alavonin Ba'adu Yipol is actually referring to Sancheirav and his army that were destroyed outside the gates of Yerushalayim, which actually we've just been learning about the last couple of days in Daf Hayomi as well. But here the Gemara is davishing it about the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. The Maharal makes a point. The Beis Hamikdash is unique among all places in the world. It's like it's not part of the regular world in the same way a king is not part of the regular mass of humanity, and therefore it has to be that way. And Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai continues, you're asking if I'm the emperor, why haven't you come until now? The reason is, Biryoni de Ispon lo shavkinen, because the Biryonim among us wouldn't let me. So Aspasianus says, let me give you a mushel. Ilu chovis shol dvash. Imagine you have a barrel full of honey, v'darkon, udrokon, whatever, koruchaleha, and a snake is wrapped around the barrel. Rashi explains koruchaleha doesn't necessarily mean wrapped. It is a dovok v'lohu tachareh. He's eager to go and get to the barrel. Wouldn't it be worthwhile to break the barrel to get rid of the snake? The nimshol being, in other words, if you have the biryonim who are dangerous to us Romans and you Jews aren't getting along with them either, then in that case, better to destroy the whole city of Yerushalayim, the whole barrel, in order to be rid of them once and for all. Why is he using the metaphor of honey particularly? Marsha points out we find in halacha that honey is one of those liquids where if it's left uncovered, you have to be concerned that a snake may drink from it and inject venom into it. So therefore, that's what's going on over here. We're talking about the snake has not actually drunk from the honey yet, but there's the concern that it might. Therefore, it's worth breaking the barrel to get rid of the snake rather than allowing the snake to drink from it, and then it's going to poison it, and then later on somebody's going to have the honey, and it's going to create problems. Ben Yehoyada explains differently also. We know, you're not allowed to bring honey as a korban. Why? Because it represents gaiva, among other things. So he's saying that's the problem. You have all this gaiva of the biryonim, and then therefore that's what's leading to your destruction. So now it's like the snake, which is after the honey, and you yourselves are like honey, where Hashem is not accepting you, anymore. Anyway, Ishtik, and Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai was quiet and did not answer anything. Generations later, Rabbi Yosef says, or some say Rabbi Akiva, this is like the Pasuk says, Meshiv Chachamim Acher. Hashem turns the Chachamim backwards, the Datam Yisakel, and he makes the Das foolish. What do you mean? Why does Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai not have an answer? Iboyle the Meimah, he should tell Aspasianus, Iboyle the Meimah, Shaklin and Savza, to continue your moshul, we take tongs, v'shaklin and lay the darkin, we take away the snake, v'katlin and lay, and we kill it, v'chavisa, shavkin and la, and we leave the barrel alone. In other words, the nimshul would be that we'll work to get rid of the biryonim, and then we'll be able to talk terms with you and make peace, and we won't have the problem with them. So why did he not think of such a thing? So Marashah explains, in other words, what Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva are saying. It must have been the Averis of the people at that time that prevented Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai from coming up with this answer. With that said, there are a couple of Mephoshim who point out that even with that, still, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai couldn't think of such an obvious answer. And in fact, in the Medrash, when it tells the story, it tells how Aspasianus' officers asked the question to Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, and he gave them the very same answer that's in the Gemara over here. So what's going on? So the Chochmas Manoach points out, and a couple of, I think, Ben Yehoyada points out along the same lines, it's very dangerous to contradict an emperor. You could end up losing your life even if you're right, as you have the story of Tir Bar Shalom and Avodah Zarah, for example. So therefore, out of respect for Aspasianus, Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai can't give this very obvious answer to his face. But of course, he knew the answer, and he told it on later on to the Roman officers over there. But nevertheless, he couldn't tell it to Aspasianus because, yeah, he'd end up worse off than he was. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola. of Chof Gimel Adar Beis, our generation, the Rebbe talks about, we have the job to finish the Birurim of Ikvas Hidda Mashiach and to bring down the Gilui of Mashiach, the Matama Asara Tvachim, into Olam Hazeh Gashmi. And that means a person looks into it for even a short time in these kinds of things. He should be tremendously fearful and trembling that, look at this, everything, all these amazing, tremendous things that it talks about in Yonei Mashiach and Divrei Chazal. And by the way, the next couple of days, we're going to be learning them in Daf HaYomi. So those who want to join us in the mornings, then come and we'll be learning the next couple of days all about in Yonei Mashiach or Geula and Gemara. All of those Giluyim, all of that depends on our Avodah now. Okay, we finished. So starting a new simon in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the dinim of Eruv Tchumin. Practically speaking, for most of us, we're most of the time going to have to deal with an Eruv Tchumin only when, like, we're up in the country or something. If we're talking about when we're home in Brooklyn, you could probably walk all, I don't know, probably always, probably you could walk all the way to Washington, D.C., and you might be considered still within the Tchum, I don't know. But in any case, so you're not allowed to go outside the place where you started Shabbos more than a Tchum, 2,000 Amos. Now, a person's place is considered 4 Amos. For this purpose, we count the Amos according to his own, according to the length of his own arm. So if a person is unusually tall, then he'll have a larger 4 amos than anybody else, the Alter Rebbe says. So therefore, so if a person is out in the middle of nowhere, ben hashmoshes, then he only has 4 amos in each direction. But if he's in a city, then the city is his place, and therefore you also have Ibura Shalir, 70 amos outside the city, and that belongs to the city, and then from there you begin measuring the Tchum Shabbos, as we'll talk about in the following Sifim, how exactly you measure it and what you do to extend it with an Eruv Tchumin, and so forth.